This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've spoken with a number of musicians about how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting work. And as you've heard, there's a common theme. Despite the challenging restrictions the pandemic has created, many artists have managed to both keep working and connect with audiences in surprising and creative ways. Maybe even some new kinds of creativity are possible. Diane McElfish-Helly is a violinist with the Grand Rapids Symphony, and she joins us now to talk about what's in store for some of our largest ensembles, classical music, in the coming months. Diane, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
So take us back. How did your professional schedule change at the onset of the pandemic? What were you working on when everything shut down?
Well, for the Grand Rapids Symphony, it was sort of a dramatic moment because we were at lunchtime, ready to come back after a lovely morning rehearsal for a dress rehearsal for a performance. The next night, guest soloist flown in, a conductor flown in, and the CEO met us to say, or had us call in to tell us everything was stopping immediately. So like everyone else, I think, things just were suddenly cut off, and we went from a schedule averaging maybe 4 concerts per week to 0 for the next 5 months.
Yeah, it's kind of a 0 to 60 situation. So have people been meeting or rehearsing? Is that even possible?
Well, it wasn't possible at all to do. So the first thing that happened is the symphony organized one of those fabulous performances where we all play at home and it all gets put together. And we happen to do the Hallelujah Chorus.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
So our chorus was involved and it was released Easter weekend. And we had hundreds, thousands of likes and listens. So that turned out to be a successful launch. And that got a lot of us learning technology that we had not even known that we could do because, you know, you have to do what you have to do.
You know, I think something a lot of people don't necessarily know if they're not classical musicians is that there is a lot of home practice and a limited number of rehearsals when everyone is all playing together. And yet I've got to believe that this puts a strain on how the time that an ensemble can get with each other. I mean, have you even been in the room with everybody else in the symphony since March?
So no one's been in any rooms at all. What we did do in August is have our summer season, which was postponed. It's usually with a big orchestra out at Cannonsburg and with everybody outside. We kept the outside part and we did all things with small groups. And in all different ways around town. So we were following all the guidelines of the state of Michigan, but still making it possible for people to finally get to hear live music again.
What does this do for your sense of feeling creative in the moment? Have you been feeling very creative lately?
So for me personally, this has been a really interesting time and not a bad time. In some ways, it's a good time. I think if you have kids at home, it's a lot harder. And because I don't, then for the first time since graduate school, which was many years ago, I have had the time to concentrate my practicing on my own playing and on back to looking at every minute thing I wanted to and the chance to rethink things. So the slow pace has made it possible for me actually to plow a different kind of work into my playing. So I actually think I'm going to be coming back from this to the orchestra when we really get to start up in a great place. I feel like I've been charged up for another decade. I think I floundered around like probably most everybody for a few weeks when this started. And then I just realized that there was an opportunity here that I wanted to take advantage of. So musicians tend to be really disciplined or make schedules or have long-term goals. And it was just the realization for the first time, I didn't have one single concert on the calendar, and I didn't have one single piece of music that I was learning for some distant date, and I could make those choices and do that all by myself. So that was kind of thrilling.
You've had a chance to see how live streams can work for classical ensembles. I'm curious about your takes on how that kind of a medium can work within either orchestral or chamber music.
I think having those live streams, I think that's like a lifeline at this point. And there's a difference between when you do the ones when you're all recording at home and sending them out and what you just said, the live stream, because that live piece is what makes the difference. And so coming into fall, that's what the Grand Rapids Symphony is going to be doing, is having us finally able to get together. And we will be live streaming a set of concerts starting September, I think it's the 23rd, but doing our regular Friday, Saturday performances. We'll do two different performances. We'll stream the two different ones. The audience members will get their ticket or their internet connection, and they'll get to hear that live performance. And I think we'll be playing that for the audience that night. So I think it's a new thing for us, but it's a real connection with our audience. And I'm actually more excited about that than I thought I was going to be.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking today with Diane McElfish-Helly, violinist with the Grand Rapids Symphony. You also head up the symphony's initiative called Music for Health. Last time we talked to you on Stateside, you had actually received a big award, the Ford Musician Award for Excellence, for your work in music therapy for patients who had traumatic brain injuries or chemotherapy. I mean, obviously, with a communicable disease, that's a little different kind of a health challenge. But was there anything that you learned in your music therapy work that you think might help people navigate this moment of heightened illness and heightened stress?
I think all of us who do that have gotten a chance to see how music touches you deeply and how it affects you physically. And that's true for all of us. Obviously, in a music therapy situation, it's healthcare providers, it's music therapists using music for those very specific medical, non-musical ends. But the effects work on all of us. So I think the making of music, if people can do that, you don't have to be good. Is it something that you can do for your own enjoyment, you can do with people in your household? Then go ahead and do that. Make that part of your day. If it's listening, I think that's how people are most used to using music if they're not musicians themselves. Then know that that's something that can really be healing for you, helpful to you.
I mean, can you think of any historic period that we might draw something from in this moment? I mean, a lot of times classical music is something that we take in context of its story, where it was composed and when it was composed. Are there any pieces that have been particularly speaking to you lately?
I was thinking back to the 1918 flu that everybody talks about, and I had a great aunt who was a nurse at that time, and she had told me a lot of stories about that time. And so for me, knowing that experience is really similar to what we're going through, that shutting things down and those great restrictions. And I was thinking about how in the arts, we always are playing pieces that are written for a time. So if you look at the early 20th century, the music that came out after and around World War I, there were all the restrictions on numbers of people that could gather or even numbers of people that were available to play. And there are great pieces of music that came out from that period. So a lot of chamber orchestra pieces, a lot of chamber music, so music for smaller groups. And I think that those pieces are actually pieces that we're going to be able to do as we come back as orchestras, starting out doing a lot of smaller ensembles until we can dare to get 80 people on a stage. So we have that available. And I think also just that idea of restriction in art. If you don't have an external restriction, then you put them on yourselves as a composer. So you say, well, I'm going to compose a piece for X number of people, or I'm going to do it for this occasion. And that restricts what you write. Well, we have a great big restriction going on right now. And I think the art that comes out of this period is going to be built around what people can do. So for instance, at the Grand Rapids Symphony, we have an arranger, Stevenson, who is doing some works, taking some famous large orchestra works and doing arrangements of those for a smaller ensemble.
Mm, and interesting.
These are going to be pieces that people will use beyond this time.
You mentioned that there are certain chamber works that might have been popular or at least contemporary during the flu pandemic of 1918. Anything in particular that's been on your mind or you've had a chance to practice?
I have to say my answer to that is no. My practicing has been focused on the 20th century, almost exclusively, except for a little bit of Bach, because what violinist doesn't do Bach? But I was looking at literature that was more recent, the Harbison Four Songs of Solitude, for instance, that were written for solo violin. Because when I'm alone in a room with no ensemble work coming up, it seemed like a great time to look at solo violin literature. A piece by André Previn that he'd written that was very difficult, and I dabbled at for a long time, and so it was a piece instead I could throw myself into. So the chamber works I've been doing, or the solo works, I think were really just focused on my own interests and not really from an earlier time.
You know, Diane, it's funny. I think a lot of people may believe that classical music involves a little less day-to-day creativity, and that much of the repertoire that is programmed tends to be older works, and that there's not as much improvisation that's involved. But do you find that this time has been a real challenge to the creativity of the musical world? Pose some new challenges, maybe?
I think that classical musicians and all musicians are actually always living very much in the moment and always looking for the perfect sound, the new expression. Sometimes we do it within the old classical pieces, but nearly all of us are quite interested in newer music that's written. Mm-hmm. The improvisation side of things, I know the Music for Health repertoire that we have sets of meditations that we do that are actually improvised duets. So that's a lot of the music that many of us have been doing in our summer parks concerts or our porch concerts. And those are just taking some charts and then going as long as we want, like you would think of a jazz musician doing, but not in a jazz style. So I think that does stretch us. It isn't necessarily what a lot of classical musicians are trained to do. But what we are trained to do is to look for the new and to try the new. And I think we enjoy that. So yes, we definitely have opportunities for that. I should say for many of us, the technical aspects now of doing things online and recording things and learning how to teach Zoom lessons to our students.
there's all kinds of learning going on here.
There's all kinds of learning, and that's, you know, whether you want it or not. And I do think good things are going to come out the other side of this. I have no doubt about that.
Do you worry that an industry that is so deeply involved with the concert hall and historically kind of dependent on older listeners who can afford subscriptions, do you worry about the survival of our finest ensembles during this period?
I don't. Maybe I should, but I really don't, because this is an art form that has lasted now for hundreds of years. We play 250 to 300 years worth of music. The human beings have been through everything in that time. People have been talking about the audiences are getting older for over 100 years. So I think that also doesn't speak to the truth that new people do keep coming in. My bigger worry right now is that the young people getting started, the people coming into that pipeline who make up the players of the future and the listeners of the present, that's been disrupted right now. So I do think that the teaching we're doing and the way we're trying to keep the education going through this time is really important. But I think that this art form speaks to people. So as long as it speaks to people, I think it's going to continue. And I can only speak for our area, but the Grand Rapids Symphony has a board, it has administration, it has a city that genuinely supports the orchestra. It's a city that supports the arts. I think actually we're going to come through this time and people are going to be reminded of the value of getting together and doing this, being part of this collective thing. We hope they're going to feel that with our live stream, but even for those who are waiting and longing for us to come back into the concert hall, I think when that finally happens, there's going to be a great rejoicing. So I think we do need to hold on, and it's economically tough. And it's probably personally tough, but I have no doubt that we're going to come back as strong or stronger than ever.
Diane McElfish-Helle is a violinist with the Grand Rapids Symphony. The ensemble is producing a series of 6 virtual concerts beginning on September 25th and 26th. There's an awful lot going on here, including an appearance by world-renowned violinist Joshua Bell and a collaboration with the Grand Rapids Ballet in the season premiere. Diane, we're looking forward to seeing what you're doing. Thanks for checking in with us.
My pleasure.
Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.